Now, in 2013, Edward Snowden was holed up in Hong Kong, out of the reach of the US authorities, but only just. Then, before flying to Russia, Snowden disappeared. The story of how that happened emerged late last year, but the people who helped him now appear to be in harm's way. And on the line is Edward Snowden's Hong Kong lawyer, Robert Thibault. Good afternoon, Robert.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Could you tell us something about your practice in general in Hong Kong? Because, as I understand, you do help asylum seekers, or at least that's part of your practice.
Yeah, probably a bit more than the majority of my practice is doing work for asylum seekers who are seeking refugee status in Hong Kong. And the balance of my practice is a mix of criminal law, and I also do some corporate commercial work. But by the majority of the work I do is basically for asylum seekers.
How many asylum seekers are there in Hong Kong?
At this time, there are a little more than 12,000 asylum seekers in Hong Kong. Most of them are coming from Southeast Asia and South Asia. Mm. And there are a smaller number that come from West Africa and also East Africa.
And the process for granting them asylum or not, is it quite a long process?
For most asylum seekers, it's been a horrendously long process. And that's because the Hong Kong government had not put any asylum screening system into place until 2004. That screening system was found by the highest court in Hong Kong, the High Court in Hong Kong, to be an unlawful system because it was so unfair. So in 2010, a new screening system was put into place. They called it the Enhanced Screening System. That only addressed asylum claims based on the United Nations Convention Against Torture. That system was deficient in that it didn't include screening under the Article 33 of the Refugee Convention for refugee claims, and didn't include screening under Article 7 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. So a new system was put into place after court challenges to the Court of Final Appeal. So a new screening system called the Unified Screening System was put into place in early 2014. So each time a new system was put into place, the asylum seekers' cases were put on hold, or those who had been rejected were then told, okay, you can be screened all over again. Mm. So we have a situation where, you know, most of my clients have been here since the early 2000, 2005, 2006.
Oh,
and for the three families who assisted Mr. Snowden, they've all been here since 2002, 2004, 5, and 7.
When you were, and I know you can't go into
a very long process.
Yeah, now I know you can't go into the details particularly, but when the opportunity, if you like, was there to represent Edward Snowden, did you give that a lot of thought, given that obviously it was going to receive a lot of attention and might affect your practice?
No, not at all. When I received the call or contact, I was aware that there was an NSA whistleblower. And he had been disclosing what the U.S. government had been doing in terms of electronic mass surveillance on its civilians and civilians in other countries and governments in other countries. And I realized at that point his identity, he had exposed his identity. I just saw him as any other client that required legal assistance. And it was obvious he was in a situation where the situation of urgency, and he was distressed.
Mm.
So I just proceeded forward to act for him without, it's not my job to consider whether there are any consequences to me or any benefits. As a barrister, my role is to act without fear or favor.
Yeah.
So I didn't think about it at that time. And now, treated him like any other client.
Now, as you've alluded to, when he had to disappear, he went and stayed with these three different families. Two of them are Sri Lankan, one's Filipino. For these families, did you have to have a long conversation with them as to perhaps how possibly dangerous for them it was to look after him?
The first step was, you know, to protect Mr. Snowden so that he could not be removed from Hong Kong. Was we had brought him to the UNHCR in Hong Kong. And once he raised his asylum claim there, then he had an absolute right not to be removed from Hong Kong. And then the next step was to put him underground because we didn't want the media to know where he was. We didn't want to know where the government knew where he was. The U.S. government, I mean, obviously, is in Hong Kong through its consulate. So I considered, well, he's an asylum seeker at that point. And it just made sense to put him in with other asylum seekers. The asylum-seeking community is very protective of fellow asylum seekers. When I approached the families, they understood this is a case of urgency. We tried to impress upon them that, you know, this is a case of very significant magnitude. The families didn't hesitate. They saw Mr. Snowden as someone who was in a position that they had previously been in when they had fled persecution and torture in their own country.
Mm-hmm.
It was explained to them that this was a high-profile case, but they insisted they wanted to help him. They recognized he was one of them.
Had it been your hope, after he managed to get to Russia, to keep the identities of these families secret?
One thing I'd like to clarify is Mr. Snowden never was traveling to Russia. He was traveling to Central Latin America, actually South America.
Yeah,
and it was only because of his passport being revoked that when he was transiting through Russia, through Moscow, that he was able to move on.
Fair enough. It
was explained to the clients, and you know, we all understood that it was in Mr. Snowden's best interest, and it was also in their best interest that, you know, that everything is kept confidential. We didn't want to create any security risks of any kind for Mr. Snowden. We also didn't want to create any risks for the three families.
Mm.
But it was the Oliver Stone film for which somebody had it wasn't the legal team for the three asylum-seeking families who helped Mr. Snowden. It was another party who had disclosed to Oliver Stone that the three refugee families had helped Mr. Snowden and sheltered him. So at that point, we realized that, you know, the Hong Kong government, the media, they'd be seeking to find out which one of my clients had assisted Mr. Snowden. So with 3 years passing, we realized that the smartest thing we can do, should do, is to try to control the narrative and introduce our clients to the public. We realized that if we didn't do that, my clients would be hounded, and I didn't want to take the risk that another government or the media would, you know, catch or engage my clients without a lawyer being present on the street or at their houses.
Yeah. And your clients, have they experienced any pushback or any reaction in their status in Hong Kong or from the Chinese government?
The Hong Kong government, through its a government contractor called International Social Services, based out of Geneva, Switzerland, they have a branch in Hong Kong that provides humanitarian assistance on behalf of the Social Welfare Department. They insisted on questioning the families about Mr. Snowden, which really was none of their business. Their mandate is not to question. Their mandate is to provide assistance with food, rent, utilities, etc.
Mm.
When the clients refused to provide any information on Mr. Snowden, they cut off all humanitarian support to the Filipino family, to Ms. Rodell and her daughter. So no food, no rent, no utilities, no transport money, nothing. For another one of the families, their basic needs had not been met. They made specific requests that they be provided sufficient food and rent, utilities, etc. After they refused to answer questions about Mr. Snowden, ISS refused to give them the further assistance they required to survive, which was very unfortunate.
Yeah, how are they surviving then?
They're surviving through efforts through the legal team here in Hong Kong, myself and Jonathan Mann, and three lawyers from Montreal, Canada, where I'm originally from. Crowdfunding pages have been set up, one GoFundMe, the other fundraiser, and there's been considerable donations made over the long term since last October, and that money's been brought into Hong Kong solely for the purpose to fill the gaps or the shortfalls of the assistance by the Hong Kong government. So we've made sure that families are no longer destitute through those crowdfunding efforts.
But you are hoping perhaps to repatriate them to Canada. Have you made an official application, or are you just called on the Canadian Immigration Minister?
Well, before I go to that, I just want to raise the point that the families have been distressed as of recent because the Sri Lankan Police Criminal Investigation Department had targeted the families in Hong Kong in November, December last year, looking for them, which was illegal for them to do that. And they've also engaged and harassed and threatened the families, the extended families of the asylum seekers in Sri Lanka. So we brought that to public attention to make sure there's transparency on this. So that's created another level of distress in Hong Kong. So the three lawyers in Montreal and myself have put together asylum applications to Canada, and those applications were filed in January, and they're now presently before the Minister of Immigration Canada, a man named Ahmed Hussein, who himself was a refugee from Somalia. So we're urging him to make an immediate decision on these applications so that these clients can be removed from Hong Kong and brought to safety in Canada.
Robert, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That's the originally Canadian, but now living in Hong Kong, barrister Robert Thibault. Robert, thank you very much. We're going to take a break after that. Living on Fruit.